Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 20th day of November.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our program this week was recorded at the Farm Assets Conference presented Tuesday, the 20th day of November. Our panelists included Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Bloomington Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions from Watseka, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Todd Hubbs from the University of Illinois. I asked Mr. Hubbs if he could lay out his supply and demand tables for corn to begin our conversation.
Todd Hubbs, can you set the stage for me just a little bit about where we are today in the corn market as it relates to the S&D table, the supply and demand fundamentals?
Yeah.
What? That's your job.
Yeah. I'll start with soybeans because I like to get the worst part out of the way. What we saw in November is the USDA finally accept the reality that China's not going to take our soybeans, and they lowered the exports to 1.9 billion bushels, which is 165 million bushels from where they were, and pretty close to where I was projecting it, which makes me question my own projection now. But they raised crush in 10 million bushels. I think we're getting close to the amount we can crush in their projection, maybe a little bit higher. We're not going to crush our way out of the ending stocks we're currently looking at. Their ending stock projection for 18-19, 955 million bushels with the potential to go higher. That's just brutal. When we look internationally, we're looking at world ending stocks about 4.1 billion bushels for soybeans. That's with Brazil at a 47.7 bushel an acre yield projection. Keep in mind, Brazil the last 2 years has done above 50 bushels an acre in yield. And the way their crop's gotten off to a start, the idea that they're going to come in at trend seems far-fetched right now. So we could see that grow even more as we move into 2019. All in all, they're putting their, price in the mid-8 range, somewhere in there. That's where soybean supply and demand tables in a nutshell sit. Corn, they lowered feed and residual 50 million bushels to 5 billion. I think that might come out down more. We've not seen the kind of feed and residual use the last few years you would expect with the herd we've seen in the country. Part of that's distillers' grains. Part of that's ration efficiency. Since we saw it last time, we saw herds this size in the mid-2000s. They kept ethanol production, ethanol grind the same, about 5.65 billion bushels. Exports, 2.15. All in all, the corn market's shaping up to have good use. With the stocks to use a little above 11%, we saw yield come down a little bit in November, and I wouldn't be surprised in the final yields even a little bit lower than the current yield projection. So corn sort of being held down, in my opinion, by two things. One, the soybean market. As we look forward, I think in the market there's this idea that there's going to be a huge acreage shift in 2019 that I'm not completely convinced about. And two, we've seen oil prices sort of go in the tank the last couple of weeks, and I think they're holding down corn prices. I have to say I've been extremely disappointed in corn prices this year. If any of you have seen me talk throughout the year, I feel like they're still 40 cents below where they should be, even today. But part of it's this dynamic that's going on in trade. So is that good enough setup?
So since you've been extremely, and I want to stay with you for a second, since you've been extremely disappointed, the change that USDA made in the global carryout stocks for corn as it's related to China, they found a full year's worth of corn production over a 10-year period, dropped it into the marketplace. Is that a reason that the corn market has been disappointing to you?
No, I'm disappointed in China, to be honest with you, that they only do this once every 10 years, and then everybody's surprised that they come up with these numbers that I don't know. We don't know the quality. It sort of fit with their feed pattern. You saw how much it meant. I didn't even mention it in my recap. They don't export corn. They import some. I think in the worldwide corn market, I don't think it's going to have a big impact. If you were paying attention around the last WASD, I was disappointed in the trade. Not that the trade cares what I think about them, but anyway, that big stocks in use number came out. Prices went down, and then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, and they came back, right? So I don't think that it's going to have a big impact on corn prices from our perspective on trade in 18-19 or in 19-20 or nobody knows what's going on. You can't believe a word they say. I'm sorry, you just can't. And I don't know what their stocks are. And their numbers are all over the place. Their hog herd estimates probably elevated. Just in general, you just sort of have to, you have to take their word for their numbers, but who knows? Maybe these guys have deeper insight into the accuracy of their numbers.
Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities jumps in here.
Why do we have to take their word for their numbers? They just made them up, as far as I'm concerned. $150 million extra from one report to the next of stocks by China. I don't believe it, but that's what we're doing. We're believing it.
Now, when you convert that, by the way, that's 5.8 billion bushels. So it's not a small number. On the closing mark report for Tuesday or today, I'm airing Seth Meyers, so pick it up on the podcast because it's over with at this point. And I talked with him about it. Seth is the chair of the World Agricultural Outlook Board. They put the WASD report together, so the numbers were theirs when they dropped them in. And I asked about the Chinese numbers. It's not that they believe them. It's simply the fact, it's not that they believe them. It's simply the fact that the new Chinese numbers actually fit the USDA supply and demand tables for China better than the official numbers actually did, because USDA's numbers had a much, much larger feed usage number, and it just didn't work. Their supply did not work with what they thought consumption for feed was on corn. So if you can hear that on the Tuesday edition of the closing market report. Merrill Crowley, you do some, sometimes you and I talk a little bit about where things are going in the marketplace and what they look like in the charts today. Is there a chart point that you're watching for either corn or soybeans, or the development of some kind of head and shoulders or other structure that you think is useful and important?
We had head and shoulders in corn, we had head and shoulders in beans. The head and shoulders in corn pointed up to around 405 March, but we've broken back below the 380 neckline for that chart, and we're soon to be too low, or what they might call a busted head and shoulders pattern. We are sitting right at what I would say important support, around the 72 mark. I think we closed a penny lower today. But longer term, if you're looking at the seasonals for corn, it moves down. It moves down into usually December when you have large crop years. And from that, it tends to rally. It tends to rally about 20%. So you take whatever low you've got, take it times 20%, and you're still looking for corn to move somewhere in the neighborhood to 4 to 410 on a rally. On the bean side of things, it also had a head and shoulders pattern, and that one never did quite develop. It never quite got up over its neckline, and right now we're backing off. My thinking was with that, again, you usually see a 20% rally from the low. It depends on where your low is at, which I think it is already in. But on that side of the coin, we would have to have some sort of weather scare to help push that up. And we're looking for maybe making some sales with our beans to capture carry if we can get back up somewhere around the 925 area for beans. And that would be July. So if we don't, I guess what I'm thinking is we're going to see some sort of buying going into the market as we head toward the end of the month, because that's when we're going to have G20. On that buying, I think you need to try to get something marketed. If, like most things seem to be saying, we do not reach an agreement at that G20 meeting, I think beans will turn around in reverse and go lower. So you need to have some sort of plan in mind. If nothing else, buy some puts to give you a floor around that time period if you don't want to sell. We have some money that we made from puts we put on earlier, and then the 80 cents we're going to get with the beans. We get a sale around 9, 9.25, even with a large basis of 60, 50 under, we're going to have a pretty good price.
I got a question across the board for everybody real quick. Of the two commodities, even if we were to have a settlement with China, which has the most upside potential? Corn or soybeans?
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, fielded this one first.
Beans will have the biggest reaction first, but the longest lasting one will probably be the corn. Right. Because I think beans will take a bump up. We're going to sell the beans, or a number of farmers will sell the beans, and then we're going to realize we're not going to get quite as much quick shipment as we would like to see, and we look back and we're going to be depressed and they're going to sink back down. But with the corn, it could go up and take over a little bit.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing followed up.
I would agree with Wayne as far as the beans would have the biggest reaction. Initially, I think it'd be very short-lived. Corn, I think, would have a reaction. I think we could see corn follow beans higher if that happened. But in both cases, I guess what we're dealing with is we've got a lot of bushels out here to sell. I know probably nobody in the audience has bushels to sell, but there are some out there. And we've got bags, we've got piles of corn, we've got beans in bags even. I think that's what limits your upside and kills your rally, even if there is a trade agreement, is there would be cash movement. I actually look as we move into the, I think our window here from a corn standpoint is fairly small. As we move into the new year, I think we could almost see a mini harvest type situation where we're getting corn moved into the pipeline faster than we need it. So I guess that'd be my thought on it.
So I'm trying to lead to something. So if producers need to make a sale to meet cash needs before the end of the year, and I suppose this is over and above maybe the 82.5 cents that they may get in December yet, what do they do?
What's that?
What do they do? Which crop do they?
Well, here's the first. This is what I've been trying to talk to my people about. Number one, look at your situation, especially on soybeans, and see where you're at. I talked to a guy the other day. Well, I can't sell beans at these prices. Well, let's go through the numbers. Okay, you had X number of beans sold ahead at decent prices. You had good yields in his case. You're getting the market facilitation payment, and here's the price that you can sell out into the future for your beans that you haven't got sold yet. What does that come out to? In his case, it came out to very good profitable revenue per acre. So you need to take advantage of that. I think that's my thought on beans. Listening to everybody up here earlier today and today, I think we're silly if we think there isn't downside in soybeans. And we do have good carry in the market. You can go out and sell deferred March, for example, soybean futures, put the bases on it later if you have a better basis level to do it at. Maybe in your area the basis is already there. Just sell some forward to cash soybeans. That's kind of my thought on, so to answer your question, that's the first step. Get the dollars out of the beans that you can, and then I think you need to look at the corn in the same situation, see what your situation is from a revenue per acre standpoint. That's what you pay your bills with.
Earl, you want to follow up? Anybody got a question too? You want to follow up on which crop to sell and when? Questions?
You should have probably the biggest bounce period, just simply if they bounce a dollar, you know, versus corn bouncing 50 cents. The thing is, if they'll have that, will you get the news for that to happen? If you're needing cash, I can't really tell you. Money management would suggest you go ahead and sell the crop, and you're not going to be able to take care of the carry. We are seeing basis levels at certain areas improve. I know in my particular area, I'm not seeing a great basis improvement over what they were in September. I'm looking at the Gulf basis. I haven't seen that improve that much since back in September. The spreads aren't really improving. The rule is you got to see your spreads start to narrow. And yes, the DSMARTs did improve just a little bit. But you got to see your spreads start to narrow, your basis start to narrow, and then your cash is going to move. Now, with all this corn out here, it makes sense that the farmer, just like he said, there's a lot of corn that's got to be moved. And the old adage is the price doesn't go up as long as it's in farmers' hands. So, you know, until we get through that initial surge of getting rid of grain, that's going to be a lid on all these markets. Take a look at last year. We had that lid on there. Bang, we took off after that lid was released sometime March, I believe, late March. So, yeah, beans will probably be a big pop if we get the news. Otherwise, corn and everything's going to be limited. You go back into 2014, the fall of 2014, and you can start from about October sometime, and you look at all the days there are out there. Anyone take a guess how many days in that time period, which is like 50.6 months, how many trading days were above $4 on the board for December corn? Anybody want to guess?
16.
199. Above 430, it drops even greater. I believe above 430, it's only 3% of the time we get above that. You get $4 on the board, you probably ought to be reacting to that number.
Who's got a question? Ask a question, get a ball cap. Anybody?
By that same token on corn, when we get 19 corn above $4, we got in the last month to 407, right around there, I'd be booking some 19 corn also.
Another thing to think about, one of the things that we've done on probably 10 to 20% of our new crop beans is, first we had some people that sold $10 calls for 25 cents. That's 10.25. If it goes that high, if not, you got 25 cents to throw back in. Well, we got a little rally back there, and I decided I don't like paying margin calls on short calls, and farmers get nervous with them. So I went to 10.60 calls. We got 23 to 27 cents for them. Well, that's 10.85 beans. How many of you guys sold futures for over 10.85 this year without a carryout as big as last year? Now, do I think that they're going to get there or not? No, but if they do, so what? I've sold 10.85 beans. Crummy basis, even like this last year's been, that's still $10 cash beans. Not a bad way to start 10 to 20% for next year. Also, you heard all the statistics about over $4 corn. I haven't looked at those real closely, but I am waiting for a little pop. You know, my friend Donald tweeted me this morning and said things were looking good. He says he's very hopeful. You know, Donald and I are just like this. You know, he tweets me and tells me lots of things every day. So, you know, I'm thinking that we're going to have something good happen. We're going to have a little bit of a bounce here, and I'm going to maybe sell some stuff, or if we can get the basis to tighten in. Okay, right in the holiday time season, in a lot of cases in here, is when the basis comes in. It's when your ethanol plants aren't going to be as strong because it's not as profitable to do ethanol right now. But somebody's going to pay up a little bit for stuff. Sell it.
Hey, Wayne,
good basis.
I was going to ask you or somebody there a question about the president's Twitter account, actually.
Okay.
And how important is it that producers, given the low prices, have offers in with you or the elevator or someplace else? Because the president has the ability, clearly, to move the market 15 cents when he decides to. It's happened 4 or 5 times already this fall.
And it generally happens when you're not paying attention or early in the morning, in the middle of the night, whatever, something like that happens. I have got some of the best fills that I've got that I leave as open orders for my customers, for myself, who I'm day trading, whatever's doing along that way. I think you set a goal up here, you put some open orders in, you take it, you go on. If you're like everybody that I know that's a farmer, you're not overly sold, you're overly produced this year. You've got a lot of crop, you've got a lot of beans, you've got a lot of corn yet to market. What's wrong with getting them back up where we get to some of these other levels? What's wrong with if I've got an extra 50,000 bushels of beans in the bin to sell a couple of these $10 calls or $9.50 calls, or where you think you'd be more than willing to sell it, and you've got that extra 25 or 35 cents that you got for selling it, and that's sort of a way of being in there, and you can go ahead and take it. That's where we've got to learn to pick up an extra 10, 15, 25 cents on the year where we need it.
Hey, Wayne, what do you think about on those calls you're selling, using that towards a put purchase possibly on new crop beans?
Yeah, I mean, that we in a lot of cases, we will buy a put, sell a call, and maybe sell a put below things. Some of the guys that end up with the highest average market price that deal with me do that. What Bill said is great. You know, I don't care whether you use that 25 cents to add on to your bottom line or to add on to your protection for your put. It's a way of making money. It's a way of looking at things. And I think if you listen to any of the good grain companies, people's advice, they're all telling you to have open orders in, have some target prices, and sell when the basis is good. And we're also looking at, okay, I sat back with Steve Freed today, head of ADM's investor services there. We were talking, he said February is generally the lows. If you sell some of your stuff out, look to buy some March calls, March, May, or July. He even said July calls during the month of February when the prices generally dip.
I have a question for all of you, and if you've got a question, just raise your hand. But on this one, how many of you do the check you're going to get for the MFP, the market facilitation payment, mean you're not going to have to do anything to make sales before the end of the year? How many of you mean you don't have to make sales before the end of the year? I need to know. Right. All right. I don't know whether I believe that.
but having those prices in there, have a mark set where if it gets there, you don't have to be watching it. You get some sold. How much have you got extra? You haven't got sold. How much have you sold for 19? I've got guys half sold that have an average at $4. They sold some back when it was 414. We haven't been past 407 in a month, but I've got guys who got 405 for it for 19. Have prices in there waiting for it to get there.
Yeah, so I asked that question not to be mean. I'm just trying to figure out what the psychology is and whether you're willing to hold through January for those that which you have in the bin or that you have in commercial storage, right, for the 2018 crop. And if the market facilitation payment is causing you to hold that off, and whether that's worthwhile. I think they're telling you no, it's not. But maybe I'm wrong.
I just want to say something here because I think it's really important. Whenever we were talking, Todd was talking about the carryout and the ending stocks and that. I mean, where we're at on the corn, I think, is, yeah, we've seen reduced stocks, and I would agree with your assessment, but we still have adequate stocks, or more than adequate stocks of corn. And when you're in that situation, I mean, look back at last year. What do you do on the nearby month? You kind of stay in a range, and right now, if you look in the last 4 weeks, probably we've been in a range of on December futures, 355 to 375, something like that, just a narrow range. And while we're doing that, and we just keep chopping back and forth, it's really been a pretty boring market. Last year was a boring market the entire winter. I guess that's kind of what I see happening. But if you look out to the March, the May, the July futures, you have that carry that you can take advantage of. And I think it's really important that you look out to those months, and when you get to that higher end of the nearby range, that you make some sales out front, either cash forward sales or hedged arrives or futures, whatever you feel comfortable with, to take advantage of that carry in the market. And the reason I bring this up, Todd, is everybody wants to concentrate on their nearby cash flow that they need because it's that time of year. But keep in mind that you can get some stuff locked in further out there at the same time that you're taking care of your nearby cash needs and pick up, in the case of these marks, probably about 12 cents right now on the future side of it.
You know, the acreage guesstimate for next year on corn went from 89.1 to 92.7. If you're going to be, if you're thinking along the same lines as what they're predicting, remember you maybe need to market a little bit extra corn or an extra contract of corn, or sell it a call or do something along the way for that, or buy a put something somewhere when we get a bounce, more so than you did the year before if you're going to switch like that. Mitch McConnell made sure that hemp is in the insurance program. That's going to be a big deal down in Kentucky where they've got some places to process it and what they're doing. They were talking about diversifying, whether you have different kinds of beans, non-GM, GMO, with everything like that. One of the things is probably looking at something along those lines. I know we had the high oil beans that had really good premiums for a couple of years, and this last year the premium went down, so most of the guys in our area didn't grow them. But, you know, like I say, one of the things is we are looking at that. If we don't get things settled, or we can get things settled with China, will we have the agreement they're going to come back and buy our beans? You know, we're talking about a 6 million acre drop in beans being planted in the U.S. next year if we don't get things straightened out here. So, but, you know, we need to look at some of that. Another big thing that a lot of you nobody's mentioned here that we've talked about, is the Fed has been very aggressive at raising rates. The fact of the matter is they have dropped. That was an 88% chance they're going to raise it in December. It's dropped to 70. 70 is still probably they're going to do it. But there's a real talk with a lot of the financial people, instead of 3 or 4 or 5 rate increases next year, that there might only be 2 because the world economy is slowing. If we can do that, maybe our dollar can go down, and that can help our export market also.
How important for you, maybe Todd Hubbs or others, is it that the administration has started to say when we're going to talk, when the president talks with President Xi in this month, at the end next week, that he's going to ask for a commitment of soybeans? And it's the first time they've really thought about asking for a commitment to make sure that there's a market to come back into.
I don't think that makes any difference whatsoever. I mean, how many panels have we done like this over the last couple of years?
We got a lot more this winter.
This is the best one I've ever been on. Real all-star group of advice up here. Like, it's been good stuff.
You need to come to the office for some education.
I feel like...
Who's got a question?
I believe in pre-harvest marketing in the 19 crop, and if you haven't priced any of your 18 crop, what these guys are saying is a good idea. This window, I feel like, is getting extremely narrow.
They need to see you again. I know.
Around this G20 summit meeting, you know, the president's going to go down to Argentina. They're going to go behind some door. He's going to come out, say something spectacular, tweet a few things. I expect some kind of rally. And then we might lay a 25% tariff on him on January 1st.
Well, the thing about the market lately on beans is when somebody says something good to the administration about China, they go up like last Friday. On Monday, when somebody said something bad about China, they dropped 18.5. Well, today again, they were talking. What did he tweet you? It's going to be good.
We're very positive.
Very positive. So beans went back up 7 to 8 to 9. So from Friday up 7 or 8 to down 18 on Monday to up 7 or 8 today. It's doing that over political statements that I don't know if they mean anything, but they're grabbed onto as headlines. Long term, we have needs for usage, and we have a pile of them sitting there. So when you have up moves, we need to be selling. When we have down moves, we maybe need to look at re-owning some for that bounce down the road.
Anyway, however you guys structure your marketing plan, if you don't have a marketing plan, this is my chance to say, get a marketing plan. It just the thought, just the process of thinking through a marketing plan helps you market. If anybody have never done it, there's a lot of ways to market your crop. There's two things that I'm looking at in 19. One is the acreage report in March for sure. That could be the end of the corn rally if there is such a thing coming out of this harvest period. I sort of expect corn price to stay in this range, 360 to 380 for a while, basis to narrow in some parts of Illinois, and then get some little strength. But man, if we're seeing 94 million, which you've heard some people say, I don't necessarily believe that, but whatever that March prospective planting report is, a big jump in corn acreage next year, it's going to hang over corn prices regardless of a trade negotiation. Soybean prices, this thing is getting narrow. I know there's a lot of questions in the previous panel about short run and long run implications for soybeans. I think about this constantly. It's confusing as all get out. But right now, pricing your old crop, if you're sitting on stored soybeans that you haven't thought about pricing, these guys have mentioned numerous ways to do it. I think there's going to be some opportunities coming up here in the next few weeks. If we get to January 1st and that tariff goes into place, I think we're in this thing for the long haul. I mean the long haul. So there's going to be a window here for pricing. Corn, I agree. If you can see at any point, I believe at any point between now and whenever, if you can get beans at 9 and corn at 4, what are you doing? What are you doing? Really, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Waiting for another 20 cents.
Yeah, sell it. I mean, that's, I don't care how you sell it, right? And I'm not saying you just need to sell 100% of the 19 crop. I like to think about risk management in terms of your crop insurance portfolio, your ARC and PLC payment. Have all that stuff in your head, right? And when you're thinking about forwarding a crop, how much do I need to forward? Could you forward 75%?
You can do a marketing. You can do a marketing plan on one page.
On one page.
Put it on your refrigerator. How much am I going to grow? In a poor year, you can put that in. In a good year, you can put that in. Put an average in. Okay, when do I need to get rid of this stuff? For money, I need to get rid of some by now, by then. If it gets over this, I need to sell some. If it gets over this, sell some. If the market changes due to political news or whatever news, take it off the refrigerator and change the numbers. But have one. You can put it on one piece of paper. If you don't know how to do that, call one of these guys. They can help you. But put down numbers of both bushels and prices and put it where you see it every day. Don't be afraid to put something up there a ways. I mean, we could go 50 cents up on an agreement with China on beans right away. Doesn't mean they'll stay there, but if you didn't have it in there to sell at the elevator or sell somewhere else, you won't get it. Have it written down, have it at your local elevator or your local commodity place.
Well, Dan Zwicker called me at a meeting. My phone went off early in the day. If you thought somebody had forgot to turn his phone off, that was me. But he said, remind the folks that we generally have a weather event every 6 to 8 years. And our last bad weather event really was in 2012. So have a little optimism. There might be some weather coming along. And I said, Dan, it's been really good in South America. He says, yeah, but everybody else is going to be bearish all day, and you want to be the one that tells them something good. So, but anyhow, I think that there is going to be some cases if you do sell as high a percentage as Todd probably recommended, or if you do get in this place that you feel that you might be a little less comfortable, you can always buy a call. You can sit back and cover some of that. You can make sure that your crop insurance is there, you know, to help you and do things along the way. But don't just get caught saying, I don't want to market anything if we get up to prices that you can figure. You know, we had all sorts of little programs up here that's going to tell you if you can get so much money, well, you know, you can stay in business and keep going. This next year is going to be a very rough year. We're not going to see a lot of help from Congress. We know they're going to be gridlocked just like they were before. And so don't look for a lot of favors out of Washington. Don't look for a lot of favors out of China or Brazil or South America. They're out to avoid us. So be aggressive, but don't get yourself caught up and think you can't do something because we have options and we can put those in with a limited amount of money and have some of those in. Hey, why when you go home today do you not call your elevator, your broker, whoever, and say, let's sell some 1060, 1040 bean calls for 30 cents or something like that. It's something that will give you the money, as they said. You can use that money to buy that put to guard the bottom, too. So, you know, just think about things. We're not totally like the world's falling off. We're not going off the flat earth here, sailing off the edge. But we are going into some rough waters. And I think we have to remember that you know, we want to have our life jackets on, and we want to survive this trip.
So I had a question from kind of tying in this morning, and be interested in your views as well. I think you're absolutely correct. This is going to be a rough. It's going to be a rough 2019. As you're looking at overall portfolios of your clients, how much diversity out are you thinking about? How much diversity are you thinking about non-GM crops, some other diverse specialty markets, in order to help that overall that overall profitability of a crop?
I'll just give a quick answer. Across my client base, I'd say it's a very high percentage of people that have some kind of diversity, some kind of specialty, something like that. You know, I'm in Central Illinois. We've got some real opportunities here. Maybe they don't have everywhere, but I don't know what the percentage would be, but it would be 80% or more people that I have that have some kind of specialty crop, or you know, maybe seed beans, maybe organic, maybe non-GMOs. But it's pretty high that people have taken advantage of that.
My answer would be not enough. Simply, not enough diversity.
I would agree with that, not enough diversity. The guy today from the Saratoga area that talked about specialized crops, one of my clients lives next to you, and well, he does business with you. I was going to holler at you earlier, but I didn't get the chance.
I think that one of the problems with that is in some areas it's very available, in other areas it isn't. We had the high oleic beans that were very good for a couple, 3 years. The premiums really dropped off the last couple of years, and the guys that even did stick with them, they ended up with highly damaged beans, having to plant some of those varieties. I don't know why or whatever, but National Starch was a big one over in the Indianapolis area over by me. They are talking about even the contracts that they reduced, just paying them off on their contracts and tell them to go to an elevator this year because they are stocked in so well. I think that basically we're looking towards, or we need to be looking to have University of Illinois, Purdue, everything, maybe something more that the ADMs, Cargills can help us with coming, or like you're doing in your area. We need to have more of those available. I wasn't joking when I said about the hemp. Who's the big senator that...
McConnell.
Yeah, but the one senator made sure that that was in the crop insurance bill.
Yeah. McConnell from Kentucky.
One thing we talked about at crop insurance meetings. That they're making sure that in Kentucky has that available because they think they're going to need to diverse into my things. And we're going to have to look at that. Now, another thing about that, if they come and inspect it and it's over 3% TCH in it or whatever like that, they can destroy your whole crop. So it can get really scary. But we don't have any place or where to take it in Indiana here yet. It's Vermont or somebody that legalized it.
A gentleman this morning talked about diversity. He said the first 2 years could hit you hard. You got to be know what you're doing. You can't just jump into something you don't know what you're doing. So in my area, corn and beans is basically it. We'll have a little bit of wheat, but I grew up down near Interstate 70. They don't even grow any wheat there anymore. It's all corn and beans.
So I'm in the back of the room, and Gary Schnittke is still here. He didn't take up the net farm income for 2019. I think this is probably a good time to have him drop those numbers out for us.
So we've begun projecting income for 2019, and just to give you a little feel, this would be for a typical farm in Illinois, about 1,500 acres. 2017, those incomes would have been about $80,000 per acre. For 2018, we're projecting those at $130,000 to $140,000 per acre, based
per acre
on high
or farm.
or per farm, excuse me.
I like his numbers. His numbers sound good.
He was growing marijuana.
Wait, yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. He must have been, yeah, growing marijuana. What you thought about. And it had a high THC.
He was growing marijuana.
Anyway, so $140,000 per farm. And that's based on having very good yields, marketing some of the crop at the beginning of the year in a market facilitation program payment, you know, $50 to $60 per acre. And if we get double that, sort of up that $135 to $160. And again, that there's going to be a lot of variation around that. For 2019, we are projecting right around minus 80, and that's based on a three trend yields, 360 corn price and the 880 soybean price. And again, so that goes to minus 80. Throw in a 20 bushel higher corn yield and a 10 bushel higher soybean yield like we've had in the last five years, and you get close to zero. And that happens because of your soybean price goes down a buck and your cost per acre are going to go up.
Okay. Come back. What were the midpoint sales numbers again? At what price for corn and soybeans?
So for next year, 360 corn and 880 soybeans.
That's cash price basis Central Illinois. Yes, sir.
Based on Gary's highly optimistic numbers, would that say that we should be marketing 70 or 80% if we get $4 futures price and 20 cent basis?
Yes. I would say yes. Here's the deal. I've looked at the chart and I understand how much or how few days we spent above that. And then Wayne is talking to Zwicker and they come out and they say, well, every 6 to 8 years, you get a weather problem and the price goes up. Well, when I gave you that how many days and where the opportune time has been to sell, I also have a point where I'm going to protect. Now, I might put on puts so that I can get you a large percent sold so you don't have to worry about delivery or production, or if the market goes up, and then I'll roll those up, or I'll buy calls. But I do have a specific point where I want to do that. So I guess right now what I'm trying to get at, I appreciate your price, but the three main things I've heard so far tonight that I thought was the most important out of anything, and I'm not talking about the professors, I'm talking about this panel here. The one was Bill saying that quit thinking about it just in price, whole farm income. You might be surprised how that works out. The other thing I heard was Todd saying, make a marketing plan. And then Todd Gleason said, place offers. Those are the three most important things I've heard tonight. All the rest of it is basically opinion of where we think prices are going. Now, it's a pretty well-educated opinion, I think, in my case, but unless I start growing hemp down there in Kentucky. But anyway, those are the three most important things I've heard tonight.
The thing about the marketing, if you buy calls or buy puts or sell calls or sell puts or buy futures or sell futures, if it starts going the wrong way, you can get out. If you sold too much cash, you can get in with calls to participate in going up. If you didn't sell enough cash, you can buy puts to protect it going down further. So there's ways to make up if I screwed up on one. It's not all or then. I had a customer one time, I told him to sell corn at 415. You know what he did? He sold it all, 100%. You know, have a marketing plan where you sell increments.
And have the plan B. These are educated guesses. The market does whatever it wants to. What's your plan B if plan A didn't work? And like I said, I've got a plan A. It's to get grain sold around 4 to 415. My plan B is to protect it, depending on how I get that farmer put in those positions to protect his downside.
I got the plan to take care of the upside. Make the plan now.
I guess I just wanted to ask Todd, you'd said something about the acreage report, and maybe this goes back to Gary too, but when I look at the numbers, I guess I kind of think that the market's job here between now and next March is to get farmers out of their rotation because otherwise we're going to have way too many bean acres. Is that the way you see it, Todd, or is it?
So I'm an economist, so I build my own models to forecast stuff that are frequently wrong and wrong by big magnitudes. But I have my own model for forecasting acreage. And right now my model says about 91.2 million acres of corn and 85.7 million acres of beans. Now I use all the principal crop prices that I forecast forward to try to figure out this portfolio around the country, right? I feel like some soybean acres are going to come out, but reality is starting to set in. What are we going to plant other than corn and soybeans here in the Corn Belt? Anybody want to get in the wheat business?
It's a little late.
Yeah, it's a little late. And it seems like it's dang late for Kansas. They've had trouble getting their crops out. I don't think their winter wheat acres is going to be very good. So when I'm looking forward to what's going to happen in the winter wheat seedings reports in January, I think that might come in lower than a lot of people predict. Where are we going to see the acreage go out of soybeans? Some's going to go to corn. I think you're going to see some spring wheat acreage come in the northern plains. I think you're going to see a little bit of cotton acreage in the mid-south and Texas, maybe a little bit of sorghum, maybe a little bit of small grains. But all in all, the idea that we're going to lose 8 million acres of beans, to lose 8 million acres of beans, I think we're going to have to lose about 4 million acres, period. Is that going to happen? I mean,
I got a question for you on that. If we do lose those bean acres, what's it going to go to? What's it going to do to bean price? And if we gain that many on corn, what's it going to do to corn price?
That's a good question. I was going there. I'm glad he stuck that in there for me. Right now, when we look in my models I built, how many acres of beans do we need next year in 2019 to keep the price even where we would like it to be, say, 880? We're looking at carrying out 955 million bushels right now. Even if we planted 82 million acres of beans next year, if we had a similar kind of yield to this year, we're not getting rid of any of those ending stocks. Is everybody with me? So I don't know how many bean acres we got to get rid of to recover the price, especially with what's going on in South America, what's going on with our trade deal with China. There's no bottom to it, basically. We're talking 75 million acres of beans, maybe. That's not going to happen. A huge increase. I think if my model's right, you know, we do about 92 million acres of corn. I think that's supportive for corn prices. I know we've got a lot of corn, but we're using it at a pretty good pace. Some of the danger I see is with ethanol. I'm worried about it in the short run and into next year. But if our exports maintain the kind of pace I think they can, I think we're going to be all right. We'll do at least what we did last year. So I feel like corn prices, even if we increased about 92 million acres, are basically flat. You guys with me? If we go to 94, it's going to put pressure on them. I don't know what acreage we're going to do in beans, but it's not going to be enough to get rid of these stocks we're currently toting around with us. That's why I'm really thinking, when I said I think there's a small window on these soybean prices, I wasn't joking around. If we get into February and it turns out Brazil's already harvesting that monster crop they might put in and sending it to China, and they do a record yield and a record production, we might be toting around 4.5 billion bushels of world-ending stocks. That's independent of us. Everybody with me? So we're in a sort of a narrow window here, I think, for soybeans. I think corn's got a little bit of, I hope that answered how I'm thinking about it, and people can disagree, but that's how I see it sort of breaking out right now.
Okay, this is a little bit different. The cost of getting it wrong is is as high as I can remember, and I'm kind of concerned about the next generation. So I kind of wanted to know, are you getting much interest or increased interest from younger farmers? That it seems like the education process for the young guys is just hasn't been there, and they get lost. I don't get very good conversations with young farmers. They don't worry about it. Is that something that you see? Is there a trend in your accounts? Are they going up with younger people or not?
My question is, what do you call a young farmer?
He says he's young.
I think the interest has gone up just across the board. I think we're moving into a period where we're going to see some consolidation, and there's a lot of farmers, which I wouldn't call young farmers, that are like my age and Pete's age and came into the business in the 70s, and I think that took 40 years to build up equity, and don't really want to cut into that equity. So I think we're kind of going into that period. So, yeah, I've seen it. We've actually had requests to, have some training and stuff geared just towards those young producers, just to kind of give them some background that maybe some of the more experienced guys have already.
On that note, any final word from any of you before I let these folks go this afternoon? Give them a nice round of applause, please.
Our Commodity Week program was recorded on the 20th day of November at the Farm Assets Conference that took place in Normal, Illinois. The panelists included University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing, along with Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Merrill Crowley of Watseka, Illinois, and Midwest Market Solutions. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.